Hi, I'm Laura Cox Kaplan. Welcome to She Said, She Said podcast. Here on this podcast, we talk about the building blocks and the micro habits that help us create real and lasting influence. What do I mean by that? Well, we're talking about the kind of influence that helps you achieve your goals and whatever it is in life that you want to accomplish. But perhaps most importantly, it's the type of influence that helps you create real impact and that enables you to truly thrive. Hey friend, welcome to episode 290. How many times have you said to yourself, my email inbox is completely out of control? Or maybe you're like me and you just look at the first few emails and you basically avoid dealing with a problem that has been building for maybe over a decade. Friend, I wish I could say that I was making that up, but honestly, ever since we started using email, I feel like I've struggled with staying on top of it and not letting things fall through the cracks. This problem has only grown worse as we now have to monitor all the different messaging functions in other apps. Now, don't get me wrong, I love hearing from folks, but it can be daunting to stay on top of it all. Now, if you know me or you've been listening or following me on Instagram for any time at all, you know how much I love a good productivity hack. And if that resonates with you, you are going to love this conversation this week. But it's more than just getting more out of your day. It's about prioritizing to make sure that where you're spending your time is actually giving you the value, the output, and the impact that's most important to you. Spending a lot of time looking through hundreds of emails is probably not time well spent, am I right? And that's time that all of us could be using to have more impact and to build more influence that we can use in ways that help us build support for whatever's important to us. This concept is at the core of my conversation this week in episode 290 with author and Google's productivity expert, Laura Mae Martin. Laura has spent the past 13 years building strategies and tools to help Google executives be their most productive. She's sharing these thoughtful, down-to-earth approaches with us. Now, just think about that. Laura is the person who's helping the execs at Google make the most of those productivity tools that many of us rely on every day. Everything from email to calendars to document or organization. It's a tall order. Oh, and Laura is also the mother of three children under age 5, and she wrote her terrific book, which is called Uptime, A Practical Guide to Personal Productivity and Well-Being. She wrote the book while she was pregnant with her third baby, but she ended up finishing it after that baby arrived a few weeks early. Now, just imagine that with two toddlers at home. Now, it's important to note that this conversation isn't a conversation just about email, even though we talk about that. We also talk about list funnels. We talk about zero-based calendaring, weekly and daily themes for your calendar, managing your energy flow, and dealing with urgent when urgent actually happens way too often to actually be urgent. So a lot packed into today's conversation. I have included links in the show notes where you can download or order Laura's book, and also where you can download additional resources directly from Laura that we talk about in this episode. For now, though, here is episode 290 with my new friend, the fabulous Laura Mae Martin. Enjoy. Laura, welcome to She Said, She Said.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you, largely because, I mean, not only was I excited to meet you, but because I am such a productivity junkie. I love a good checklist. I love concepts and conversations about how to be more productive and how to get more done in my day. So I was thrilled to learn about your book and to have a chance to read it and to have you here today.
Yeah, I'm excited. Everyone says, who is this book for? And I always say, anyone with a to-do list, anyone who's looking to get more done. So as you said, that's everyone.
So you have become Google's expert on productivity. But as I understand it, that's not necessarily the job that you started out in. Maybe talk a little bit about your career.
Yeah, I started at Google in sales, and I quickly realized that my skill set was not perfectly aligned. So I took what was that StrengthsFinder 2.0 quiz, and it told me my biggest strength was harmony. So when I'm helping people feel in harmony and I'm in harmony and you know, helping people feel that happiness, that's the best career path for me. And underneath that, it said, do not do sales. So, you know, I noticed that I was fulfilling my sales role, but I was really interested in how I was organizing my time, how I was managing all the client emails that were coming in, how I was organizing team events when we did big sales events. And so, you know, I started doing at the time the 20% role, which was just on the side coaching people on some of these tactics that I was using. And so I had lots of different roles from that point in event planning and product management and some things that were a little more aligned with that harmony skill set. And then eventually I started working one-on-one with our executives and external executives on that idea of managing your time and energy and your calendar well. And so it just developed into a full-time role. But you're exactly right. I never would have in college, you know, thought I was majoring in this or anything like that. It just kind of developed from a natural skill set and then a need.
Yeah. Was it also something that you were, you know, found yourself digging into as you were kind of getting interested in the topic and you were, you know, working to kind of sort of dust up on the existing literature, or sort of how did that develop?
Yeah, I actually did the opposite. So I kind of wanted to develop my own full thoughts around productivity and how I did things and how I'd always done things. And I didn't really want it to be tainted by other productivity books and things like that. So I did dive into research, you know, like something like meetings or how many times a day people are checking their email. I think that stuff is so fascinating and plays into, you know, our need to figure out how to control those things. But I really wanted to, you know, even just the list making system, I wanted to put down on paper how I've been doing it for 15 years before I got other tips. And so I went that route. And of course, you know, once I developed all the material at Google, I did read some of the top productivity books, and a lot of ideas are similar about how to manage time. But the good thing is a lot of things are different. And that's why I think it is so personal, is not everything, you know, one thing I really don't like is the Pomodoro method, which is talked about all the time in productivity. So I think it's just about finding what works for you and knowing that productivity is so personal and you have to customize your own workflow to really play up to your productivity. I think that's the biggest piece of it.
Yeah. What is the Pomodoro method? I probably know it and don't know it by that name.
Yeah, I was going to say most people like setting a timer to focus on something for 20 minutes and take a 10-minute break and then 20 minutes. You know, it's based on research that our brains think in those 20-minute kind of sprints. But for me, I find it easier to do more of like a deep dive and then maybe take a longer break. And, you know, in the book, I talk about how some people are really productive in the morning and some people, the mornings feel like, oh, I just cannot get anything done. I'm still waking up. And so again, it's just about finding those natural patterns about yourself and being intentional about it.
I love that. I absolutely love that. So I think it's important to sort of set the stage for the conversation, to also talk a little bit about the other aspects of your life, right? We can't separate what's happening at home. And if you happen to be a mom, many listeners listening are moms. You're a mom of three. I believe they're all under age 5, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Under age 5.
Yes, 4, 2, and 1.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. You've got a full-time job. You've written this fabulous book. You've got 3 kids under 5. You know, there's a lot going on here. Maybe talk a little bit about, you know, the other aspects of your life as well and why this was so important to you.
Yeah, I think that sometimes people say, oh, how are you productive when you have, you know, all these kids or all these things going on? But I think that it's actually why I had to develop a lot of these systems in order to be productive, because time doesn't just float by when you have all these you know, things going on. You really, you know, for example, before I had kids, I had this lovely morning routine where I, you know, took all this time for myself, and it just came naturally because no one else was there. But now if I want that same sort of intentional, peaceful morning, I really have to make the time for it and schedule it and think about it. Same with meal planning. When you're just cooking for yourself, it's a lot easier to just, what do I want for dinner tonight? But when you have five people counting on you, you really have to think through at the beginning of the week, what's there to eat. So I think even though it seems like because there's so much going on, how do you get things done? It's actually because of all those things that I've learned that developing systems and processes that work make your life so much easier. And that's really, you know, once somebody asked me, what does productivity mean to you? What does this all mean to you? And it was always about taking the things that I have to do, shrinking those down so I can do more of the things that I want to do, whether that's, you know, finishing some work things so I can spend more time with my kids, or, you know, really getting things good at home so I can take a business trip I wanted to take, or whatever that is. It's about doing what you want to do more often.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely love that. Let's jump into the book. You titled the book Uptime. So why uptime? Why was that important? What does that mean to you?
In the computer world, uptime is the time that a computer is on and productive and running. It's the computer's uptime. And so everyone has those times, no matter how fleeting. You know, you can close your eyes and think about them when you're thinking, wow, I'm really killing it right now. I'm on top of it. I'm thinking of all the right things. I'm getting things done. I'm feeling good. And so I wanted a word that encompassed that zone and how to hit that zone more often. So that's what I'm calling uptime, that sort of calm accomplishment. You know, I'm really in that zone of getting things done, but also balanced while doing it. And then of course the book talks about downtime and how most people think that's the opposite of uptime, but in fact, it's extremely important to incorporate, just like you need to restart your laptop and shut it down occasionally to keep that runtime. You have to do the same for yourself in order to have that full uptime. And so they go hand in hand.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I thought the fact that you interweave these concepts together to be so incredibly smart, because we talk about a lot on this podcast, the value of taking a break, taking a step away. You need that time in order to get perspective. It's what helps you become more creative. So I love that you incorporated that. I also, you know, loved, there were parts of the book we talk about, you know, not everybody's way of taking a break is the same, right? We're not all the same. And so maybe talk a little bit about what you found in the research about the importance of that and understanding your own biological rhythm, maybe. I'm not sure how you, right? It's sort of your own, the way that you're wired, essentially.
Right. Exactly. Which is not something that you can really just make up or go along with what somebody else does. And I think that even the idea of just when you're in the weeds, just try to step back. That's a really hard concept because you're already in the weeds, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's more about the long vision of saying, I'm going to work downtime into my regular schedule where I always, no matter what, take a walk outside every day at 5 p.m. to unwind, or I take a vacation every quarter or whatever that is, because it's a lot easier when you've pre-planned it than to try to in the weeds say, I know it would be good for me to take a break. But the interesting thing is when, you know, there are a lot of differences in as far as how people relax. And, you know, for me, spending time with my three young kids is relaxing. That certainly might not be the case for someone else. So it's about noticing those patterns. But when I do big speaking events and I ask people, okay, where do you think are your best ideas? You know, in the shower gets a lot of hands, on a commute, workout, cooking, you know, doing absolutely nothing with work. Then I ask, your seventh meeting of the day, no hands, you know, knee deep in your email, no hands. So I think it's differences in where you're getting that downtime, but the idea of it's being a time that your brain is not active mm-hmm. is the one consistency. And so that can come in different ways for different people. And it can also come at different times a day, which goes into the concept of, you know, power hours and off peak hours and looking at your own rhythms and saying, I know about myself that I am the most productive in the morning. So if someone asks me to do a big strategic decision-making meeting at 4 p.m., you know, I can just feel it in my bones It is not a good time of day for me. And for other people, it's the total opposite. If I ask them to join an 8 a.m. meeting, they feel like, oh, that is just not where I'm my best. And so it's about finding those times and then doing the right thing with the other time. So if somebody says, hey, I'd love to do a mentorship chat with you, I'm going to use some of that low energy downtime to do that versus my peak focus time. And so it's not about, you know, only working during your peak time and not doing anything. It's about, okay, I have a bunch of expenses to do. I'm going to slot them at a time when I know I'm already low energy and I'm not on. And so, mm-hmm. you know, it's just about thinking through where the right things are at the right time. And then of course, having that downtime, because it's not just to relax. It's where you think of your best ideas. It's like pour over coffee, just dripping down everything you've thought about all day, making this rich, bold summary of everything so that you're thinking longer term, more creatively. It's just that holistic view.
Yeah, I love that. And I love how you use the concept of being really intentional with the downtime, because I think oftentimes, even if we understand, and of course we do, right? Everyone listening is really sophisticated and very thoughtful about how they manage their time. At the same time, I think when we talk about downtime, we sort of think that's sort of what you cram in at some point during the day, maybe if you get lucky, right? Not being, yes. as to your point, really intentional about scheduling your downtime. Like that is part of your schedule. That's something that you exactly. have to be really precise about, which I absolutely love. I think that's such an interesting way of thinking about it and so incredibly important. I'd love for you to talk about, there were so many things that got my attention in the book and just interesting ways of thinking about these concepts in a way that were a little different than things that I've read before. I've had Laura Vanderkam on this podcast mm-hmm. a couple times. She is fabulous and so incredibly thoughtful, mm-hmm. but you tackle many of these topics a little differently than Laura does. And I love that because to your earlier point, you know, these strategies are not going to work the same way for every person. So let's start with urgent and the fact that urgent is not all things are created equal on the urgency scale. And just because it's urgent for someone doesn't mean it's urgent for someone else. So I'd love for you to give us kind of your quick and dirty on how you think about urgent.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Laura as well. She reviewed my book for the Wall Street Journal. So that was like a perfect fit because you're right. She has very similar and different ideas on all these topics. So with urgent, I think that, you know, a little bit what we were talking about before, some of the idea of urgent comes from this bigger mentality of the busy is important. And this idea that the more stressed we are and we, you know, if you watch your language, sometimes it's more around, oh, you know, how it is, fire drills, you know, I'm slammed, I'm back to back. And, you know, when people say things to me like, oh, I'm sure you have so much going on. And I say something to them like, I'm actually at the perfect level of commitment. It feels like awkward because it's like, what? Nobody says that. That feels weird for me to say that, you know, I'm balanced. I'm in the zone. I'm focused on the right things at the right time. And so I think some glorifying urgent in a way has become a little bit popular, which, you know, it's a little more like that video game mentality. It's more fun to battle the urgent. In the book, I talk about my favorite out of office that someone put up that said, I'm on vacation. If this is urgent, dial 911, which I just think is so funny because it's like, you know, if you're in advertising sales, what is truly urgent? Right. But, you know, the bigger point being that urgent things come up, yeah. you know, they come up and that's okay. And, you know, if they come up once or twice, you may need to handle them. But I think when people say, I have urgent things come up every day, what I'm saying is that usually means, first of all, something's wrong in the system. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's things coming up that are urgent every single day, then we need to address the process of how that's happening and try to get ahead of it. But that being said, again, there are still roles where urgent becomes part of the everyday, but you have to then treat that like it's one of your priorities. So I talk about, again, in the book, no surgeon schedules well patient visits, no ER doctor schedules surgeries throughout their day. Because right. what happens is patients come in and they'd have to say, I got to cancel this. I got to cancel this. No, their job is urgent. And so if that is your job, you may find yourself saying, hey, I'd love to commit to this project, but I have to leave room in my schedule for things that inevitably come up with this role. You know, that's called making room for urgent. Or one executive that I work with just keeps 1 hour free a day. That is his time for if anything came up the morning of, his whole team knows about it. They all organize around it and say, oh, we're going to talk to him at one. That's when he always has available for things that come up. And so his schedule doesn't totally blow out. And so you can use things like, is this urgent and important? If so, I feel good about, you know, totally wrecking my schedule for it and it's the right thing. Is it urgent, but maybe not important? How can I schedule time to deal with it later or address what I can now and do it later? So it's really just about how you're looking at it. And then just being honest with yourself, if it is part of your role, then don't also commit 100% and then try to leave room for urgent. You know, commit 60% and leave the rest for urgent. I think people just sometimes forget about that piece because it's not right in front of you until it is.
Yeah. But again, it's about being really intentional and understanding, being reflective enough to understand what's actually happening in your day to day, and then being really intentional about allowing that time. I absolutely love that. Okay. I'd love for you to talk about the concept of valuing your time. And I think that is such an incredible topic, especially for a podcast that is focused on women and our personal and professional development and getting as much out of the day as we possibly can, but also not forgetting that our time is valuable. And so maybe talk a little bit about your thoughts on how to get a handle on how to value your time.
I think when people want to value their time, they instantly try to find this magic number. And it usually has to do with something about how much they get paid per hour at work. And that's their hourly worth. And, you know, I challenge people to go a little bit further than that and just think through things as small as if you're doing something every day for 20 minutes that could be solved and you wouldn't have to do it, how much would you be willing to pay for that? So you want to look at something you're doing every day for a year. How much time is that worth? You know, what would you do with that time? And so I include a series of questions to ask yourself whenever you're thinking about what is my time actually worth? Mm-hmm. And it could be, you know, I'm thinking about what would I pay to get an hour back of my time of something that I don't enjoy doing. That's usually the biggest way of thinking of it, because if it's something you enjoy doing, now the value of your time is a little different because you're also getting the value of the activity. But questions like, do I enjoy doing this task? You know, like we mentioned, will it take more effort for me to delegate it than it would, you know, if there's something that takes 4 hours to train someone on and it would take you an hour, now it's still a benefit of your time to just do it. You know, what would I be doing instead? How would I be using my time elsewhere? And how would that value me? Can someone else do it much better than me? You know, in that case, it's definitely worth delegating. How much money would I pay to not do it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, one I like is, do I feel like I should do it? Because there's some people who, you know, they could delegate cutting their yard, but there's some weird sense of pride that when I do it, I feel like I did it. And so that has to be taken into consideration too. It's not always just, you know, exactly dollar for dollar should I be doing this? So I think it's just, again, about taking the time to actually think through things and then thinking about what's not a good use of your time. So I talk about my towel closet is just not perfectly neat. And I'm proud of that because I'm like, you know what? I go in here maybe once a month when we have guests. I didn't take the time to perfectly fold everything. And I'm proud of the hours that I have saved throughout my life, not making sure that closet is perfectly neat and where I've spent the time elsewhere. And so giving yourself that permission to not do everything super well, because you know that that's not a good use of your time in every situation, and just constantly having that trade-off mindset about your time. If I'm doing this, what am I not mm-hmm. doing? Is this worth it to me? How could I be doing something instead? So it's really just getting that wrapping around. And now I feel like I'm so much of a shark about my time. You know, I'm constantly thinking, you know, is that the right use of my time? Could I be using my time better? And thinking through that lens.
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely love that. I come out of the PricewaterhouseCoopers world and we had a concept of highest and best use and always asking yourself, what is your highest and best use? Is this something where the value added is better coming from me, or is it better to delegate to a team member so they get the experience, or maybe they're just better at whatever that happens to be? And I always love that concept, which when I read that in the book, it kind of reminded me of that as well. I love that.
Yeah, I love that phrase.
Yeah, it's
That's great,
right?
Way of putting it.
We use that here at home quite a bit. Like, is this highest and best use?
I'm going to start using that.
Okay, let's talk about one of my other really favorite parts of this book that I thought was so interesting. And again, maybe it's because I was drawing from my PwC days, but this idea of zero-based calendaring, which I thought was so interesting, where you start with the nothing. So in particular, just to set the stage, I think that, you know, it can be really hard when you sit down to work with a client, or when you sit down yourself and you're overwhelmed with way too much to do, and you're like, holy bajoli, how in the world am I going to like put all this together, right? And it can be so overwhelming that you don't quite know where to start. So maybe let's kind of start from that standpoint of where do you start and how does this notion of zero-based calendaring help?
I think when you're solving a problem, we sometimes go to that 10%. Okay, if I'm looking at my calendar, where can I kind of knock off 10% of things here and there to make it better? But instead, you want to go to the 10x because it's actually similar effort levels to do a radical change versus a tiny change. And so that's when I get people thinking about, okay, if I could redo my whole calendar. And of course, that's not always going to be possible, but the look of delight on people's faces when I'm coaching them and I hand them a blank calendar, it just gives them the feeling of, I could design my own life. You know, just having that feeling of, I get to choose, I get to think about what I want and where I would put it. It just gives you that mindset shift. Of course, you're not going to say to your manager, you know, I've decided I can't go to your staff meeting because it's not during my power hours. You know, that's right. Not realistic. But if you never make a plan of how you would want your ideal week to go or your ideal flow of your schedule based on your rhythms and your actions that you need to get done, it will never go to plan. It will never even go 50% to plan. And even something going 20% to plan is better than just bouncing around, which is what most people do. And the idea of it being zero-based, you know, zero-based accounting, of course, is not looking at the budget from last year because of the endowment effect. We tend to just hold on to these things and place more value on things that we already have, is the psychology principle. And so, you know, I talk about zero-based closeting. Open your closet like it's a store. Go shopping. What would you buy right now? Or do you just keep that shirt because you've always had it? And so zero-based calendaring is that same idea. If I was invited to this commitment today for this long, this frequently, would I accept it? Or have I just always gone to this biweekly meeting and never really put any thought into it? So it's just a way of shifting your intention to say, would I take this on right now, right now, right now? And if I could, how would I block this? And what I usually tell executives is, we're not planning for tomorrow here. We're planning for maybe 3 months ahead, because you may have the ability in a quarter to say, starting next quarter, I'd like to do most of my one-on-ones on Monday. And that's the way my energy flows, because Tuesday, I want to actually follow up from all those or whatever it is. And so let's think about designing your schedule far out and then implementing it maybe in waves or implementing it at a later date with communication. But it's just helpful to actually ask yourself, what do I want to see on my calendar? What would I accept right now? And little things like, I come out of my manager's meeting and I always have things I need to do. So I find that I need some time to focus after that. And I've always just had this meeting there, you know, that, and I get frazzled then because now I'm in another meeting and I never get to those action items. And so something as small as a 30-minute block that you can start blocking in 3 months, you know, that small change, one change can make a big overall difference. So it's just about finding those little pockets.
I absolutely love that. You know, one thought that occurs to me as you were talking is What's the advice that you give people when they are forced in the course of their job, especially for people that are working for someone else, and they have to be at their optimal during a time window that's not necessarily their highest or sort of peak energy level? What's your advice for how to deal with that? Because you can't always rearrange things when there are other people involved.
Right. And I think a lot of my job is working with executives, but I make sure to tell people I'm also working with what I call the sandwich level, where they, you know, have managers and they're managing people and, you know, they're taking on a lot of responsibility. That's actually where a lot of the pressure falls when it comes to scheduling and meetings and prioritizing and people who don't have full control of their schedule. And so I think that what I always focus on is what do we have control of? So at the first activity as part of the zero-based calendaring is putting anything on your calendar that you cannot change. We know this, that your manager has their meeting at this time. We're not changing that. Or you have to go to this product review. That is not up for discussion. But then what you can do is build around that and say, okay, because I'm asked to do this work at this time, that's not really my peak time. Can I maybe give myself a break before or after that, knowing that my energy is usually in a better place if I can gear up for it a bit? If I have a meeting every, you know, Friday morning at 10 and I'm usually feeling slow, I'm going to just block 9 to 10 for myself to prep for that meeting and not try to put something else there or be unrealistic about what I'm going to accomplish before that. And so just trading where you can, you know, whether it's I'm traveling for 4 full days, Monday through Thursday, I don't have control of that. What I do have control of is what I put on my schedule Friday when I get back and, you know, what I can think through and prepare that for myself. And so it's really just about taking what you do have control over and using that to your benefit, because that's really in life, that's the only thing that you have is your own, the things that you can control. And so you're saying, okay, I have these things I cannot move from my calendar, but now with what's left, what can I do with that? Or what can I do to help future me prepare for that schedule that's not ideal for me?
Yeah, that's such a smart way to think about that. Okay, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about email because it's the bane of my existence. And I know a lot of people feel the same way. Maybe it's generational. I don't know. Not that I think I'm so old, but I really am. But now with email, you know, we also have, you know, inboxes in our social media as well. So you've got Facebook messaging and you've got your Instagram messaging and you've maybe got TikTok and you've got LinkedIn and you've got, I mean, God knows what else, right? There's just a lot of things that you're trying to stay on top of. So this concept of inbox zero has always been aspirational and completely unattainable for me. Your hair would probably light on fire if I told you how many unread email messages I have. It's horrifying, but I've sort of grown to live with it over the course of decades. So let's talk about maybe some of your best tips for, like, literally I am in the remedial category as this topic is concerned. But maybe some tips on how to begin to get the situation under control, asking for a friend.
Yes. So I think that just like you said, email is so personal and it's so in our faces and it's such a sense of anxiety for people, whether it's work or personal. And for a lot of people, it's the first thing they look at when they wake up, the last thing they look at before they go to bed. And so whenever I'm coaching someone, I usually start with email because I call it the gateway to productivity. If we can wrangle that, you feel this sense of lightness that can then spread to things like your schedule and your energy and your time. But if you're working on those things, but then constantly in the weeds of your inbox, then you're taking a backward step, basically, you know, the 25 times or more you open your phone to check your email every day. And so really what I go through is a 3-step process with people. The first step is taking everything out of your inbox that you don't need to see. And so a lot of times when people have these really high unread counts, it's either that they're on a lot of emails that they don't ever need to open, or it's that they're ignoring thousands and thousands of coworker emails, which is not usually the case. It's usually, oh, I've signed up for these things and it's just in the weeds. And people think if I'm not opening the email, I'm not, it's whatever, it's just sitting in there. But every single email that comes through if you're scanning the subject line to see if you need to open it, it's you're giving it an energy dollar of yours. Mm. You know, you're shelling that out. So even all these emails coming in that you're not opening, they're still using some of your energy each day. And so simple things like searching for the word unsubscribe in your inbox will quickly bring up all the emails that are not addressed to you. And, you know, I tell people it's not about clearing every single email that's in your inbox. It's about finding the things that you don't need to get again in the future. So really all these people that are sending you things are probably sending them once a week. Mm-hmm. So if you just looked at the last week of unsubscribe emails, and in Gmail now you can just click the button unsubscribe within the email. You don't even have to go to the webpage or anything. You know, now you've saved yourself next week from getting a lot of those. So that can be a super simple one. And sometimes just stopping there can change a lot for people. They're saying, wow, now I'm really only seeing the things that I want to see. And now they kind of get picky, like, oh, I didn't catch this one. And now everything that comes in is something I care about. So I'm going to start really thinking through, like, I don't want this and I'm going to put it in a folder or whatever. So that can be step one. And then step two is popping the things that you really do need to see. So if your kid's principal emails you directly, the CEO of your company emails you directly, those things should look different in your inbox than if they email the whole school or if the CEO emails the whole company. If you're in a lot of meetings or traveling, you need to be able to open your inbox and have a general idea of what's in there. And so I create VIP labels for a lot of people. And it's basically if these three people email me directly, have those look red and, you know, important and come through so that I'm not missing anything. So the first one is getting out what you don't need to see. The second is really honing in on emails that are important. And again, if you only did those two things, you would still be in a really good place. So we haven't even gotten to the third step, which is that inbox zero. But those two small changes that I would say maybe take 10 to 15 minutes each. Now you're saving yourself so much brain space in the future by cleaning that up. And then the third piece is, especially for a work role, is this idea of inbox zero, which I think of it like laundry. So inbox zero just means everything's out of the dryer. It does not mean that everything is folded, everything is hung up, and every sock is matched, but it does mean I've taken out what I've gotten and I've put it into piles based on what I need to do later. So in the laundry example, that's your fold, hang, socks. In the example of your email, that would be to read, to review, to respond. You know, those are the three things I need to do with that. And where that helps is then I can go to bed with everything in laundry baskets, but I have no anxiety because I know exactly where that pink shirt is. I touched it. I put it in a pile. I know how much is in that pile. And then it also helps with energy because I'm not using my peak morning focus power hours to read industry articles. What a waste.
Right.
I'm really taking that one basket of things that I need to thoughtfully respond to and saying, respond, 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 respond. Just like you'd fold, 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 fold. You really get in the zone, take the whole pile up to the dresser at the same time. And it just helps. So what happens with emails, people bounce around. Oh, I should do this later. Okay, I'm going to mark that as unread. Did I see that before? Yes. Okay, I'm going to respond to this. Oh, I should read this. Oh, I'm going to just forward this to someone else. Right. Oh, I'm going to go back to the inbox. Something new's come in. You know, so think about if you were doing your laundry that way, like one shirt. Oh, this is a sock. Does it go with these pants? No. These are wet. I'm going to throw it back in. You know what? Every night, I'm just going to turn the dryer on and deal with it tomorrow. That's how we do our email. And so you can see the inefficiency laundry wise. And email is just so, like, if you can only do one thing and it's cleaning up your email, it just leaves so much mental space for other things that you should be thinking about.
I love that. I absolutely love that. Okay, let's jump to list funnels and how you group your list funnel category. So we're talking about checklists, of course, one of my personal favorite topics and personal favorite tools. Share some thoughts on how I can make these a bit more productive.
I shared the list funnel system because I watched so many people make lists and it's just interesting what people do. You know, sometimes they have a list of everything they need to do. And sometimes they have a list of like one or two things they're going to do and they don't have a list of things they should do in the future. And sometimes they have a list and then I'll say, okay, when do you plan to do this? And they're like, you know, I don't know. I don't have room for that in my schedule. And so lists, it's like, they can be so helpful, but they can also be just so vague. And just today I thought of something I want to do in the fall when my son starts school. And I'm thinking, am I going to put that on my list of things I'm doing today? No, that doesn't make any sense. There's nothing I can do about it until August. And so the idea of the list funnel is to have a dashboard of everything that you could possibly do, and then realistically be pulling off of that list into a shorter format of what do I plan to do this week, or what do I plan to do this day? And then putting that other list aside so that your brain is confident that it's taken care of and it's not looping in your brain like, gosh, I need to buy that birthday present. It's on the list and I know that I'm going to look at that list again before the birthday comes up. And now I'm really focused on the things I said I would do today. And so it gives your brain that ironclad system of there is a place where everything's documented. And I have a routine of checking that place once a week and not getting to the point where I'm, oh, I forgot about this, or, you know, I didn't do this. And the way I organize my lists, which I have my right now, which I put in the book, and the list that's in the book was true, exactly what was on my list at the time I was writing it. You'll see it's like both summer camp registration and things that I had to do for work and returns I had to do from Christmas. So, you know, it was truly what I was doing. And I have found that there's really, you know, of course everybody has different roles and different responsibilities, but the categories that I give for the master, the main list, is the types of things that almost everyone has. Things, personal things they need to do on the computer, work things that they need to do, physical errands they need to run, calls they need to make, things that they've been meaning to buy, you know, returns or errands, those kinds of things. So the reason that you're grouping them by type of task versus any other way is because, for example, the other day I pulled up to the doctor's office and I was 10 minutes early. I could instantly go to my calls list and make a few calls, and they were all organized right there for me. Or if you say, you know what, on Sunday, I'm going to bring my computer to the park and get some stuff done personally, I now have a list already made of everything I need to do on my computer personally. And so by grouping them that way versus deadline or things like that, it's helping you get in the energy of doing them similar times and just having a way of saying, okay, you know, I'm traveling this week and I'm not going to get as much off of my main list as I want. Like I give the example of my son came a month early and I was in the middle of writing this book. My chapters were due. I was, of course, like, oh my goodness, this is not what I planned. But, you know, he was healthy. Everything worked out. But after I spent some time with him on maternity leave, I came back and my trusty main list was exactly where I went for everything I had dropped the ball on. I knew that there was a documentation exactly of everything I did not do and the deadline that it was due. And that there's nothing more valuable than having that list of everything you haven't done. You know, that's like, that's so valuable for your brain. And so just having those categories and then working off those categories into an actual, and then of course there's going to be days where you say you're going to do something and you didn't do it. Well, that is still on your main list. So it doesn't get lost. So it's just that way of workflow. And I think a lot of people think, oh, it sounds like a lot of work. But I give the example of the grocery store. If you just wander in without an idea of what you're going to make or, you know, where things are, that'll take you 40 minutes to an hour.
Right.
If you spend 7 minutes making a grocery list based on aisle and what you're planning to make, that seems like, ugh, I have to spend 7 to 10 minutes making a list. But then you're in and out of there in 20 minutes. So you actually are saving all this time in the long run by just taking that little moment to make a list and make a plan.
Yeah. Do you have downloadables for how you structure your lists, or how do people sort of tactically tackle this sort of list making recommendation?
On my website at lauramaymartin.com, I have under the resources tab the exact worksheets that I use for each part of that list funnel. And that was one thing I really wanted in the book, because I have now read productivity books and a lot of them are just, oh, just delegate and just, you know, this. And I'm, no, when somebody is overwhelmed, they need exact things to do. They need, that's why I wanted the word practical in the title. I wanted people to, and some of the reviews have started to come in from the book and people are saying, this is so helpful because it's exactly what I need to do starting today to do, get this done, or whether it's lists or whatever. And that's exactly what I wanted, is people to have actual tactical takeaways that you could start using right away.
Yeah. Because when people are overwhelmed, to your point, the last thing they want to do is then also think about a productivity system. They just want to put something into place, right? Again, speaking on behalf of a friend, exactly, I get this. Exactly right. Okay, Laura. I also would love for you to talk. I'd love for you to talk about the weekly and daily themes. That really got my attention. I love that concept as well. Maybe talk about that for a second too.
Yeah, the more that I researched and heard about very senior executives and super successful people, the more I realized that this is just something that they do. And, you know, I give the example of a surgeon. And if a surgeon, you would understand that a surgeon would be crazy to say, I'm going to do an 8 a.m. surgery on Monday and then a 10 a.m. follow-up appointment with a past patient and then an 11 a.m. new patient consult and then 12 p.m. x-rays and a 1 p.m. surgery. You would say, no, that's crazy. Your energy will be all over the place. You're not going to be good at surgery. You need to do maybe Monday and Thursday in the OR, Tuesday follow-ups, Wednesday new patients, you know, Friday research. And that's totally normal for a surgeon, but for some reason we don't think that way for ourselves. So something as simple as meal planning, you know, what's for dinner feels super daunting. But now if you have this schedule of I do meatless Monday, always a pasta Tuesday, new recipe Wednesday, leftover Thursday. Now you start to have some structure that you can work within and it alleviates that stress. It also alleviates you having to say, oh, I've been really wanting to try new recipes. When am I going to do that? No, you have a day that's dedicated to it. And so when you think about your work schedule, again, you're not going to be able to say, I'm not doing any other meetings except my theme this day. But even if you're able to kind of take a half day for a real theme, or you say, I'm just going to try to block Fridays as my administrative or catch-up day, because that's always when things kind of, you know, throughout the week build up. Anything you can do to group together types of activities so that you're thinking about them and really getting in the zone for more than a little 30 minute, you know, schedule, that can help so much in how you're thinking about managing your energy and your time. So whether it's meal planning or your workday, any of those things where you can say, this is my day to focus on this. So if you're a photographer, you know, Monday and Wednesday, I shoot, Tuesday and Thursday, I edit, Friday, I manage my website and post social media, Saturday, you know, whatever that is, just thinking through that can help so much when it comes to productivity.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Laura, what a treat to talk to you. I have loved these suggestions. The book is called Uptime, A Practical Guide to Personal Productivity and Well-Being. I'll include a link to purchase the book in the show notes along with Laura's website. Laura, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Okay, friend, which of Laura's productivity tips was your favorite? For me, I think it might have been a tie between the zero-based calendaring and the weekly and daily themes. I loved both of those concepts and really this idea of intentionally grouping your to-dos and your appointments together to maximize both your flow and your energy. Just so much to love here and so many ways that Laura is helping folks accomplish more of what's important to them. That, my friend, is where real influence lies. With that, I would love to hear your feedback on this or any of our She Said, She Said podcast episodes. I promise I will respond to your email. Send me a message at info@shesaid.media, or you can use the contact link in the show notes. Or better yet, if you enjoyed the conversation, please leave me a quick review from wherever you're listening. I would really, really love your feedback. Thanks for spending some time here at She Said, She Said podcast. I hope you found it a good investment in you. Until next week, friend, you take care and I'll talk to you soon. And remember, She Said, She Said podcast is a weekly production of She Said, She Said Media.